All right, 2 Samuel 23, we got started in the chapter last time. So let me start from the top just for context's sake. 23:1. Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, and the man who was raised up on high and anointed of the God of Jacob, the sweet psalmist of Israel, said, "The Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and His word was in my tongue." We talked about that last time. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake. So the God of Israel is the Rock of Israel. So that should answer whether Peter was ever the rock or not. But the God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, "He that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God." And that's what really thwarts tyranny there. I mean, you have to have somebody that fears God first and foremost. And so you have one day coming to this world a king, Jesus Christ, who will return. And he is going to rule from Isaiah chapter 11 in the fear of God. And he's going to be the right king. We've had nothing but wrong kings so far, but he's going to be the right king. Verse 4. "And he shall be as the light of the morning." That's what Jesus Christ will be. "When the sun riseth," so Jesus Christ will rise as the sun, S-U-N, of the morning, "with healing in his wings." That's a second coming reference. Says, "And he shall be as the light of the morning, when the sun riseth, even a morning without clouds, as the tender grass springing out of the earth by clear shining after rain." So like a fresh spring rain and sunrise, things are going to come back up and it's all going to be bright and wonderful one day. It's not going to be till then. Verse 5, "Although my house be not so with God," he's saying this is not about David and this is not about even Solomon. This is about Jesus Christ coming back. And so, "Although my house be not so with God, yet he hath made with me an everlasting covenant, ordered in all things and sure." And so this revolves around the covenant of David and, of course, the sure mercies of David and all those things. But the promise that Judah would always have a king on the throne comes after David's from David's loins, after David's seed. And, of course, that's ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ. Verse 5, "For this is all my salvation and all my desire, although he make it not to grow." Presumably talking about his house. Right now his house is not growing, but one day it will. "But the sons of Belial, wicked men, shall be all of them as thorns thrust away." And so the idea is that we know that the thorns are burnt. And there's a little bit of, let me just read it. "But the sons of Belial shall be all of them as thorns thrust away, because they cannot be taken with hands." I think the idea there is with a real thorny bush, you don't want to handle it with your hands. And so you get a rake or something that so you can push it away, push it into the fire. Verse 7, "But the man that shall touch them..." must be fenced with iron and the staff of a spear, and they shall be utterly burned with fire in the same place." So these sons of Belial will be burned with fire. They're going to hell. Now, the first part of verse 7, "The man that shall touch them must be fenced with iron." Now, I don't know if that's a reference to the implement, you know, being used that, you know, is pushing the thorns away so he doesn't have to touch it. Or if it's the idea, since they're sons of Belial, that if you start fiddling with them, you're going to wind up stuck yourself. And at that point, you're, you know, stuck in sin. You have bad friends, bad influences. It's something like that. I have to admit, verse 7 is a little bit opaque to me. But verse 8, and now we go into David's mighty men. And you know, you hear about mighty men in this world and you have, you know, the UFC fighters and all that stuff. There's some bad dudes here. In chapter 23, verse 8. "Now these be the names of the mighty men whom David had. The Tachmonite, that sat in the seat, chief among the captains, the same was Adino the Esnite. He lift up his spear against 800 whom he slew at one time. Now, I don't know if, you know, there are times that the leader gets the credit for slaying a bunch of people, an army. So I don't know if this is him all alone, or if this is, you know, him and his a band of men or exactly what, but 800 people at one time. If it is just him, I want to see the replay. Because I've seen Jackie Chan fights and, you know, bad karate movies, and I ain't never seen nothing like that. The guy's name is Adino the Esnite. He's also known as the Tachmonite. Now, 2 Samuel 23 flows along with 1 Chronicles 11, and the two match in some respects. They don't match, like some lists in the Bible, they don't match in other respects. And what you have to view those things as being is two different writers, the Lord emphasizing something to each of them different. It's like some of the genealogies of Nehemiah and Ezra. And so it can be something like that, but and there are some commonalities in 1 Chronicles 11, down in verse 11, again, naming the mighty men. The rest of the chapter in 1 Chronicles 11 is also about the mighty men. We're going to be sticking pretty much with 2 Samuel 23, and I don't know that it's particularly edifying for me to drag you through trying to reconcile these differences and difference of name and all that kind of stuff. That's a lot of it, is that sometimes, as you well know in the Bible, somebody's name in one spot is a different name in another spot, and that's just the way it is. I mean, you know somebody named Robert, you also call him Bob or Bobby or something like that, you know. Richard is also Rich and Dick and everything else. So it's one of those deals. But in 1 Chronicles chapter 11, he is known as by another name, verse 11. This is the number of the mighty men whom David had. Jeshobeam, the Hachmonite. This is going to be Adino the Esnite, the chief of the captains. He lifted up his spear against 300 slain by him at one time. So he not only slew 800, he also slew 300. That's not a contradiction. That's two different battles. Okay? So this cat is not somebody you want to think that you're going to arm wrestle. Bad, wrong guy. Back to, and I'm not going to jump you back and forth too much here, but think about Adino the Esnite, the Tachmonite, 800 men at one time, 300 men at another time. I don't know what these guys had going. I know that some of the karate stuff can get awfully mystical and actually even witchcrafty. But there's something going on here. These guys are trained. I mean, I don't know if they're worse, battered than seals or not, but I've never heard of a seal killing 800 people at one time. You know what I'm saying? So they had something going for them. Verse 9. And after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite. Now, when you have a father named Dodo, you have to be tough. After him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite. One of the three mighty men with David when they defied the Philistines that were there gathered together to battle, and the men of Israel were gone away. Now, we're not given all the details of all these stories that are reflected, that are we're reminded of. So we may not have record of those in there because I couldn't find anything like that. But in verse 10, he rose and smote the Philistines until his hand was weary and his hand clave to the sword. And the Lord wrought a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to the spoil. Now, he's mentioned as well in 1 Chronicles. You don't have to go there, but verse 12 and 13, he's mentioned as well. Now, there's a third guy, 2 Samuel 23, 11. And after him was Shammah, the son of Agee, the Hararite. And the Philistines were gathered together into a troop. There was where was a piece of ground full of lentils. And the people fled from the Philistines, but he stood in the midst of the ground and defended it, slew the Philistines, and the Lord wrought a great victory. So that's a type of a guy who's been pushed as far as he's going to be pushed. And you wouldn't think you'd just want to fight over a pea patch, but he'd done been pushed all he was going to be pushed. He said, this is where I take my stand, and he whooped a bunch of Philistines. Now, he's mentioned again, and so some of these, first of all, the two listings differ some. I'm talking about 2 Samuel 23, 1 Chronicles 11. And then Shammah is also mentioned in the main list of verse 33. Shammah the Hararite. There's also in verse 25, Shammah the Haradite. Two different guys. And so, again, I've never quite gotten all these to mesh perfectly together, but that can be simply answered by the fact that there's two different guys writing, and the Lord emphasizes something to different ones. It's not a contradiction. Verse 13, and three of the 30 chief went down. Now, so there's 30 chief of the mighty men, and it's hard to figure out some of this language, but we'll see what we can do. And three of the 30 chief went down and came to David in the harvest time into the cave of Adullam, and the troop of the Philistines pitched in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in an hold, and the garrison of the Philistines were then in Bethlehem. And David longed and said, oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. This is referred to twice, once in 2 Samuel 23, once in 1 Chronicles 11. And verse 16, and the three mighty men break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate and took it and brought it to David. And nevertheless, he would not drink thereof, but poured it out unto the Lord. And he said, be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is not this the blood of the men that went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighty men. So one guy kills 800 and then 300. One guy, his hand cleaves to the sword. So just typologically, in the first place, you have Adino the Esnite, or rather Eleazar, whose hand cleaves to the sword. You have, you're swinging a big old sword and you swing it for hours. And so by the time it's over with, your hand is cleaves to it. You have to peel your fingers off. Whatever insignia or sign or wrapping was on that sword handle, his hands would have reflected that. If there was a lion on it, there would have been a lion imprinted because he squeezed it so hard, right? Okay, there's a type of the Word of God. And that Word of God ought to make an impression. By the time it's over, the Word of God ought to mark you. And you ought to think like it and talk like it and act like it and all those things. Then you have the next guy, Shammah, who again pushed as far as he was going to be pushed. He had fought Philistines for a long time. There was some sort of a strategic withdrawal taking place. He said, I'm not moving another step. And he says he's been pushed as far as he's going to be pushed. And so you have to know where that is. You have to figure out for yourself how far you're willing to be pushed before, being gracious to the world and giving a little bit with relatives, so try not to compromise, but you got to, somewhere along the way, you have to draw a line and say, enough's enough. I'm not moving any further. And what usually happens is you just kind of keep sliding if you're not careful. Then you have these three. The three, David the king, a type of Jesus Christ, merely wishes for something. And these guys take it upon themselves to go get David some water. Okay, that's just the mere desire of your Savior. You're willing to go to war just to please him. Okay, back to verse 18. Okay, these were three of the mighty men. And it says this, and Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief among three. And he lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them, and had the name among three. So he's chief among three. It doesn't really say which three here. But he lifted up his spear against 300 and slew them. So it's one thing to slay somebody with a bow and arrow. It's another thing to slay somebody with a sword. But to slay them all with a spear is kind of interesting. But it does go ahead and say something else. It said, and he had the name among three. Now, in 1 Chronicles, just do me this favor. Go back to 1 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 19. There's some language between the two passages that are, it's kind of hard to sift through. Notice what it says here about Abishai. Where am I? 1 Chronicles 11:20. Well, first of all, I want you to see verse 19. And David, this is the guy's breaking through to get David a drink. And so David says, and said, my God forbid it me that I should do this thing. Shall I drink the blood of these men that have put their lives in jeopardy? For with the jeopardy of their lives they brought it. Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mighties. So it talks about mighty men, three mighties. Then it'll talk later about the first three. And so there's just some language that it's hard to determine exactly who's who, but we'll take a go at it. Verse 20, however. Now about Abishai, it says, and Abishai, the brother of Joab, he was chief of the three. That leads you to think that he is the chief of the three that went down and got David a drink, okay? For lifting up his spear against 300, he slew them and had a name among the three. Of the three, he was more honorable than the two, for he was their captain. Howbeit, he attained not to the first three. Now, we'll go back to 2 Samuel 23 for a second. Okay, verse 18, he's chief among three, had a name among three. Was he not, verse 19, most honorable of three? Therefore he was their captain, howbeit he attained not unto the first three. So the first three are going to be the Tachmonite, verse 8, Eleazar, the son of Dodo, in verse 9, and Shammah in verse 11, I think. Okay? By the way, Shammah is not named in 1 Chronicles 11 for some reason. So, but verse, okay, we're in 2 Samuel 23 and verse 20. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts, he slew two lion-like men of Moab. I'm not quite sure what that means. He went down also and slew a lion in the midst of a pit in time of snow. And he slew an Egyptian, a goodly man, and the Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but he went down to him with a staff, plucked the spear out of the Egyptian's hand, and slew him with his own spear. So he just goes in with a glorified stick and takes the guy's spear away from him and kills him with his own spear. So like I said, these are bad dudes. Verse 22, these things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he had the name among three mighty men. Now, there are apparently three other mighty men. He was more honorable than the 30. So there's 30 mighty men or chief of the mighty men, and he's more honorable than the 30. But he attained not to the first three. Again, a reference, I believe, to verse 8, verse 9, and verse 11. The Tachmonite, Eleazar, and Shammah. Verse 20. three. He was more honorable than the 30, but he attained not to the first three, and David set him over his guard. Asahel, the brother of Joab, was one of the 30, so he's a mighty man as well. Joab is not said to be a mighty man, but he had two brothers that were. Elhanan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem. Shammah the Herodite, that's a different Shammah. Elika the Herodite. Helez the Peltite. Ira the son of Ikesh the Tekoite. Abiezer the Anathathite. Mabunai the Hushathite. Zalman the son of, or Zalman the Ahohite, Maharai the Netophathite. I'm just glad I'm from Texas, okay? Heleb the son of Baana, a Netophathite. Ittai the son of Rabbi out of Gibeah of the children of Benjamin. Benaiah the Parathonite. Hidai of the brooks of Gaesh. Abalbon the Arbathite. Asmaveth the Barhumite. Eliaba the son of Shalbonite of the sons of Jashon, Jonathan. Shammah the Hararite, there's the Shammah we've been talking about earlier. Ahiam the son of Sherar the Hararite. Alephalet the son of Asbai the son of the Maacathite. Eliam the son of Ahithophel the Gilonite. Now that would be Bathsheba's dad. Take you then show you that one more time. 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel Second Samuel 11:3. David sees this woman, Bathsheba. David sent, verse 3, and inquired after the woman. One said, "Is not this Bathsheba the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" So Eliam is one of David's mighty men. He's a Gilonite. He is the son of Ahithophel, the Ahithophel that turned on David, right? So if you wondered why Ahithophel was as mad as he was mad and bitter as he was bitter, it was because of that. So, verse 35, Hezri the Carmelite, Peri the Arbite, Igal, the son of Nathan of Zoba, Bani the Gadite, Zelek the Ammonite, Nahari the Beerothite, armor bearer to Joab the son of Zeruiah, Iran, Ithrite, Gareb, and the Ithrite, Uriah the Hittite. So Uriah the Hittite is one of the David's mighty men. 30 and 7 in all. By the time you count them up, I don't come up with 37. And when you go to the other passage, 1 Chronicles 11, I wind up with over 40. So all that can be worked out, I suppose. All it can be ascribed to just different listings, different names, and so on and so forth. But it's not contradiction. All right, any questions so far? Wasn't that fun? Now you know what to name some of your sons when you have babies. All right, 24:1. 24:1. And this is something I don't have an exact, precise answer for. But it says, and again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And he moved David against them to say, "Go and number Israel and Judah." Now, I know you know this, but 1 Chronicles 21. Keep your finger there, but 1 Chronicles 21. In the very same incident in a different place, 21:1, 1 Chronicles. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. All right. Well, it said the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel. So once again, you see this thing where the Lord and the devil are in some sort of conjunction as far as the way this is dealt with. Now, the best I can come up with to explain it simply, if you will, look in Job chapter 2, Job 2. And the Lord and the devil have already had one go at it. And Job has already been smitten. But then it comes up again for round two. 2:1, again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence comest thou? And Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. The Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movedst me against him to destroy him without cause. Now the way this worked is the Lord was the first one to say something. Hast thou considered my servant Job? So the Lord brought it up, and then Satan exploded. And the Lord, although it was Satan that smote him, the Lord in verse 3 takes credit, takes responsibility is the right word, I think. Although thou movedst me against him. You convinced me to move against him, and I used you to do it. So I don't know a better way to explain it. Somehow you have both involved. Satan provoked, right? But God moved David so that because the Lord was angry with Israel. And so let's just sum it up and say the Lord uses the devil. And I don't know any better way to say it. I know that there's probably issues in your mind about, well, exactly how does that work? And you know, there was this spirit one time, and he said, I'll go and be a lying spirit in the mouth of thy prophets. And the Lord said, go do it like that. And so some of that may go against your grain, but it's still true that for a long time, and the Lord has worked hand in hand with the devil. I mean, right now, the devil is the god of this world. So the Lord blesses a lot of folks and doesn't let the devil hammer them as much as he would like to. But at the same time, we get caught up in some of the Lord's judgments and use of the devil at times. When the Lord judges a country, we're not going to get by unscathed. I mean, you know, an economy collapsing or a war affects us just like it affects lost people. So, Bryce?
I've heard the statement, I don't know from where, of some preacher somewhere, saying that Satan is the rod of God. God uses Satan to, I guess, chastise his people or, you know, the Jews or Israel or whatever. I believe that.
Yeah, I can't question that at all. That's true. Yeah, for certain. Because the Lord used Nebuchadnezzar, the Lord uses men to whoop up on other men too. And so it gets back to the sovereignty of God without God being that Calvinistic God we all talk about. But there are times that the Lord lets, you know, Doc always said that he has Satan on a leash and he'll give him some extra slack at times. And I don't know a better way to explain it. But somehow both entities had their fingers in this. And so you're going to see some of that. And so the devil gets blamed for lots of stuff that he's not directly responsible for. And even if the devil is involved, it's the Lord allowing it. So how do you, you know, how do you blame just one or the other? And what you in the end, what you have to do is trust God. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. You're not going to understand it, because you don't even see it all. You don't get it all. And if you had it all, it'd be over your head anyway. So just suck it up and trust God. All right, verse 1. Again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. Now, I know this numbering thing doesn't seem like it should be a big deal, but for God it was. And again, this is one of those deals where to us it shouldn't be, and it's not to us, but to God it was a big deal. Look, if you will, in Exodus chapter 30, and just remind you of what he's doing here. Exodus chapter 30, and even back in the Old Testament when, you know, the Israelites had to be numbered or something like that, you'll find, notice verse 11, 30, 11, Exodus. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, when thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number, so go count them and give me the sum. And so they knew how many fighting men over the age of 20 there were, and how many old men beyond the age of fighting there were, and how many women and children, and so on and so forth. So he went and numbered them. When thou takest the sum of the children of Israel after their number, then shall they give every man a ransom for his soul unto the Lord, when thou numberest them, that there be no plague among them when thou numberest them. He said, I'm telling you to go number them, but when you number them, every man needs to make sure there's a sacrifice so that I don't pound him into the dirt. Because for some reason, the Lord hates the numbering part. And so if you numbered, and when David numbered Israel, it displeased God. Now, we have to be careful because we're big on numbers. Right? I mean, and there are numbers you have to know. I get it. But for generations now, churches have been counting how many people go to their church, and that puts them on some sort of scale where, you know, well, our church is bigger than your church, which means our church is better than your church, which means our church has been blessed more by God than your church. That kind of stuff. God hates that stuff. So I'm kind of grateful that, you know, the Lord kind of taught that out of me with Dr. Ruckman and all that kind of thing, because in the end, the issue is what sort it is, not how many there are or how big it is. It's what sort it is. And so, again, this would just iterate to you that in law, I mean, boy, if you started numbering people, you were getting yourself in deep. And there was really supposed to be a sacrifice made. And so there had to be a sacrifice made for this thing to be made right. Doesn't make much sense to us, but it made sense to God. Okay, so verse 2, 24, 2 Samuel 24, 2. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan, that's extreme north, even to Beersheba, extreme south, and number ye people, that I may know the number of the people. So this is David's idea. And Joab said unto the king, now the Lord thy God add unto the people how many soever they be an hundredfold, and that the eyes of my lord the king may see it. But why doth my lord the king delight in this thing? I mean, even Joab, for the rascal that he was, sees that David is making a big mistake here. Joab's going, don't do it. Don't do it. And David went ahead and did it. Verse 4, notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. So the captains were in on it too, saying, no, don't do that. And David said, no, we're going to do it. And went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. So it shows you once again that a sweet psalmist of Israel, the man after God's own heart, if he's not careful, he can still do something really wrong. You know, can transgress. Got to be careful about that. Verse 5. And they passed over Jordan and pitched in Arior on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad toward Jazer. Then they came to Gilead and to the land of Tatimhodshi, and they came to Danjane and about to Zidon. Came to the stronghold of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hivites and of the Canaanites, and they went out to the south of Judah, even to Beersheba. And when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. So it took a while to get it done. And Joab gave up the sum of the number of the people unto the king. And there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men that drew the sword. And the men of Judah were 500,000 men. Okay, I need to show you this. Look in 1 Chronicles 21. Because here again is that issue with what a contradiction is. 1 Chronicles 21. And it's a reference to the very same event. 1 Chronicles 21. Go down to verse 5. And Joab gave the sum of the number of the people unto David, and all they of Israel were 1,000,000. Okay, that's 1,000,000. 1,000,000. 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew sword. And Judah was 430,000 men that drew sword. So neither number matches. The Second Samuel number for Israel was 800,000 valiant men even, right? In 21:5 of 1 Chronicles, Joab gave the sum, the number of people unto David, and all they of Israel, again Israel, were 1,000,000, 1,000,000, and 100,000 men that drew sword. So you have a major contradiction. So let's throw out the King James Bible. Only thing is, it didn't say the same thing. Did you notice? Did you notice that whatever's the case, 2 Samuel 23 specifies 800,000 valiant men that drew sword. In 1 Chronicles 21:5, all they of Israel were 1,000,000 and 100,000 men that drew sword. He didn't number the valiant ones. The valiant ones, I don't know what that standard is. I don't know if they had so many years of experience and so many battles under their belt or whatever, but there were more than just 800,000 valiant men. And so there's 1,100,000 men that drew sword, but all of them weren't valiant. Like that, right? Furthermore, Judah was 500,000 men in chapter 24, verse 9, 2 Samuel, in this passage, verse 5, and Judah was 430,000 men that drew sword. And again, that's just going to have to be some difference of some distinction that one time that you know, Joab is looking at these the books, and he's in one case what's recorded is all of them, in another case, just part of them. So, you can trust God for that, right? He doesn't have to just match everything, you know. Oh, this has to match in 2 Chronicles, just like it matches in 2 Kings, or else it's all wrong. No, it's not. I mean, you would, taking some tally somewhere, it would be no problem. It would be, you wouldn't give the same tally necessarily to everybody. Somebody's looking for one particular issue out of it, and another somebody, you know, if you're an accountant, if you're a business guy, you understand that. So why would you dismiss God as a faithful and true witness just because there's a number that's different in Ezra versus Nehemiah or something like that, right? Okay, we'll settle in here for a second and find a place to stop. In chapter 24, verse 10, and David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. And David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly in that I have done. And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. I have sinned greatly. I've been very foolish. Please forgive me. For when David was up in the morning, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet Gad, David's seer. How would you like to be the guy that delivered this? Saying, go and say to David, thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee. So Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land, or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies, that they may pursue thee, or that there be 3 days pestilence in thy land? Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him that sent me. I mean, you get to choose your medicine. By the time this is over, we won't go any further into it, but verse 15, that 3 days of pestilence cost David 70,000 men. David is responsible for 70,000 deaths of his own people. It's amazing, right? So don't dismiss what the Lord says about something. I mean, he hasn't fallen on any of our heads really hard, not as hard as he could have. But every word of God is right. And he means what he says. Questions or comments?